It's very exciting to be back. And the conversation we're going to have today is inspired really by Dafyomi from last week, and an appreciation that this week's parsha, Parshas Ki Seisa, is the best parsha in the entire Torah, not just because it is yours truly's Bar Mitzvah parsha, but because Ki Seisa, if we think of the Torah as being a means to a connection to our Kodesh Baruch Hu, and the Torah is supposed to be a Miloshon Hara of teaching, there are so many explicit messages right here in the Torah, in this parsha, 72, 74, multitudes and multitudes, a plethora of mitzvos, and so Ki Seisa, arguably, not just because of my bias, is probably the best parsha in the entire Torah. And when we think about all these parshios, we have to wonder, why? Why are there so many mitzvos? Why is this parsha so full of mitzvos? Not Ki Seisa in particular, but you know, we have 613 mitzvos. Now, have we ever wondered, why do we have 613 mitzvos? Why are there so many? And you'll notice on our cover, I put a picture of Atlas holding onto the world, because I think particularly people who are new to Torah mitzvos, but even people who aren't so new, sometimes they look at the massive amounts of mitzvos, massive amounts of things that Jews are doing on a daily, weekly, monthly, yearly basis, and it could be overwhelming. It could feel like a massive burden that you're trying to hold on to so much. And that conversation, I think, really gets started in the Dafyomi from this past Shabbos, a Gemara that is fundamental, that is fascinating, and that is, l'da'ati, shocking. And that's the Gemara at the bottom of Erevin on Yud Gimel Amud Beis. This is a relatively well-known Gemara, but we're gonna learn it together. It's a machlokas between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai. It's a beautiful machlokas, but it's very hard to believe. In source 1 on page 1, we say, Tanu Rabbanan, Shtei Shanim Umekza Nechku Beis Shammai Beis Hillel. For 2.5 years, these two houses of study were arguing. That's not surprising. That's pretty much, you know, run-of-the-mill. They were debating nonstop. Halalu Omrim Noach Lola Adam Shelo Nivra Yosim Mishanivra. One of them said, better for a person to have not have been born than to have been born. V'halalu Omrim Noach Lola Adam Shenivra Yosim Mishelo Nivra. No. If I had the option of existing or not existing, better that I should exist. Okay. Nimnu V'gamru. And they counted up, they sort of weighed their options, they debated back and forth, and they concluded. This is the conclusion of the Gemara. This is what Chazal are trying to communicate to us. Noach lo la'adam shelo nivra, yoser mishanivra. We are better off never having been born. Akshav shenivra, now that we've been born, yifash b'vimasa. Be thoughtful about your actions, you know, pay attention to what you're doing. Maybe yimash b'vimasa, slight difference. Does anyone understand what this Chazal are trying to tell us right now? What in the world could Chazal be trying to say that I am better off never having been born, never having been created? Ideally, not only the Jewish people shouldn't exist, mankind should not exist. We should never have been born. What a way to start the day, what a way to start a new year with a really uplifting message, right?
That way you can't do wrong.
So, Baruch Hashem, in our hybrid model, we have some locals who can share some insight. What's the Machlokas really about? And that's really what the Marsha is saying here. We don't have to look at it inside. So David pointed out that what's the real discussion? If I'm never born, I'm never going to make any mistakes. I can stay perfect. I'm never going to mess up. And what the Marsha points out, and it's not just the Marsha, the Ben Yoyada says it similarly, that when we look at the world, am I more likely to mess up or am I more likely to succeed? Well, we say, okay, well, what counts as success and what counts as not success? We have a system of do's and don'ts, of goods and bads. We have 248 positive, active mitzvot. You should do this. Blow shofar. Put on tefillin. Keep Shabbos. And we have 365 lotases, prohibitive, negative mitzvos, if you will. I don't like the word negative, and we'll actually look at that a little bit in a moment. Negative mitzvah doesn't mean anything. There are no negative mitzvos. That is antithetical to the idea of a mitzvah. There are prohibitive mitzvos, mitzvos you shouldn't do. There are passive mitzvos, but definitely not any negative mitzvos. But we have 248 things that I can positively do that will mean success, and I have 365 things that I should avoid in order to succeed. Now, on a simple numbers level, I think a lot of what we do here in this office is crunch numbers, and there's like 120 more options of messing up than there are to of success. Says the Marsha, says the Penyo, you have many, many people who understand this Gemara about what's going on in Mesechus Erevin. Noachol Adam Shelo Nivra, because you're more likely to mess up than you are to succeed. So why would I ever want to be born? Why would I ever want to play a game where I'm probably going to fail? We're in a group of close friends, and so I'll share that I made a joke to a family member, to my mother, when COVID started and everyone was at home, and I was like, you know, I should really get like a gaming system, like an Xbox, a PlayStation, Nintendo, something. You know, we're home all the time, and Baruch Hashem, I've been plenty busy the past 6 months. Thank God my walls are lined with Svarim that are yelling at me that they want to be learned, and so I haven't felt like I needed to have some sort of gaming system. However, my mom kind of took that line and ran with it, and so a few weeks ago for my birthday, she gifted me a Nintendo Switch. I totally forgot why I brought that up. So now not only did I tell you that now I play video games, but I also don't remember what the purpose of it was. Right. Oh, there's an idea in gaming that has been transferred into education as well. If you think about a game that you're playing, whether it's Snake, whether it's Pong, whether it's these more adventurous games that are popular today, there's always, it's not fun if there's no level of difficulty. It's not fun if I could just keep going and going and going, but there's always supposed to be a limit to how hard it should be, because I need to be able to succeed. I need to be able to get somewhere. And the assumption of the game that I'm playing is that I'm going to win, that I am going to be able to be successful if I put in the requisite effort. And in education, they're trying to bring this into the experience as well, that students should view their attempts and failures not as I'm bad and I'm not good at math, but this is like a game, and part of your growth in math, part of your growth in this process is to get a little bit better and venture to the extent that you'll be able to succeed, that you'll be able to win in this game, understand this math concept as well. And so, Baruch Hashem. So now my gaming has an educational value, and anytime I spend looking at my little Nintendo Switch is solely for preparation to educate Am Yisrael's children. It's a good way to flip it. Yeah. You can tell I've been a rabbi for a while now. Okay, so our first question, one of the most fundamental questions, if we were living 300 years ago not 300, more than that, if we were living in Shakespeare's time, we would be saying to be or not to be. But effectively, Chazal are telling us that you're more likely to mess up than you are to succeed. Better to have not even tried. Don't even bother playing the game in the first place. But I have a very, very big kasha on this Gemara. This Gemara shows up at the end of the Daf Yomi for Erevin on Yud Gimel. And so I imagine there are a number of places where at the end they have a Kaddish. But what always precedes a Kaddish, for better or worse, in our circles? Whenever we're going to say Kaddish between Mincha and Maariv, we say a Mishnah. What's that Mishnah? It's the last Mishnah of Maseches Makos. And that Mishnah goes as follows. I don't even need to cite you to the sources, because likely you know it. You've heard it a gazillion times. Baruch Hashem. Ratza Kaddish Baruch Hu Lezakos Es Yisrael. Lefichach Hirba Lahem Torah Mitzvos. Rabbi Chaim ben Akash is teaching us that a Kaddish Baruch Hu wanted Lezakot. We're going to better understand what Lezakot means. But a Kaddish Baruch Hu wanted some sort of Skos for Bnei Yisrael. And so what did he do? He increased Torah and he increased mitzvos. We have more of them now. We're not all together. We don't have a full minion, so please no one start saying Kaddish. But now we've got a very stark contrast, because Erevin told me that I shouldn't have been born because there are too many mitzvos. I'm going to mess up. And now Makus is telling me, Adraba, the best way to succeed, what is Lezakos? In modern-day Hebrew, lezakos means to win. How are you going to win? How are you going to succeed? How are you going to make kedai for you to have been born? Many Torah mitzvos. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us tons of Torah mitzvos. What in the world is going on here? How are we supposed to put these two together? And for some Daf Yomi Shirim, I have strong confidence that they literally said these two lines back-to-back within 5 minutes. Am I better off with mitzvos? Am I not better off with mitzvos? Just to get a little bit of an appreciation, the Marsha says something that, which admittedly is an answer. We'll see how much we love it. But the Marsha tells us at, in the bottom of Source 1, explaining this, Rabbi Chaim ben Akasha, that it will, in the middle of the first line, Hosif gam ken ken yizeh de hir b'lehem to our mitzvos, uma hir b'lehem, heim lo taseh sheheim shasa, 365, lo saseh. When we say that there was a hirba, there was an increase in mitzvos, that increase is in the form of the lo saseh, of the prohibitive, of the inactive mitzvos. V'asin in Iraq ramach, they're only 248. He sort of flips it the way that I presented it just now. So who could ilazakos laman sidko shigabeshev yatasa yizake? The Maharsha seems to be suggesting, and admittedly I haven't fully appreciated what the Maharsha is trying to get at. Maharsha is saying, you got 365 things you shouldn't be doing. Is it so hard for me to not be killing anyone right now? For the long time, I have not eaten treif. I'm not eating anything right now, so it's not so hard for me to not eat treif. I have not done any kilayim. I have not. I have a friend who every Tuesday on Twitter would tweet out averas he wants to do that are all like things that are questionable in the Gemara, just like, you know, cute, like fun things. I have not done like any of these like crazy mitzvos, these crazy averas. Like I haven't planted during Shemitah. So does that mean that I'm better off? The Maharal seems to be suggesting that I haven't done any of the 365 lavin. I haven't had any inappropriate relationships. So I'm doing well. And I get some sort of skus because I've fulfilled all these mitzvos without even trying. B'shei v'yatase, just by sitting here. In the discussion about inviting people for Shabbos, this is totally a tangential and probably not in best use of our time, but one of the discussions in inviting someone who's not observant for Shabbos when they may or may not be driving, I believe it's Rav Schoenbrach, who says, driving, not driving, it's complicated, but think about it. Think about how many times they're not going to break Shabbos if they're with you for the next 3 hours. If you're not violating anything, maybe you're better off. And so that's the Marsha suggests. We're going to sort of try and appreciate a different level of the answer, but we have to give you the Marsha because a lot of what we're seeing is based on the Marsha today. And so what we're going to try to understand is, Erevin doesn't want me to have mitzvos because I'm better off not having born because I had so many. But Makos gave me lots of mitzvos. Ultimately, maybe the question that I want to be asking is based on a quote from Antoine de Saint Exupéry. I don't know how to pronounce that. I saw a quote recently that people who mispronounce words, don't make fun of them. They learn those words in books. And so this, I did read out of a book. I got it from Simon Sinek's Start With Why. But it's an incredible quote. On the bottom of page one, he says, if you want to build a ship, don't drum up people together to collect wood. Don't assign them to tasks and work, but rather teach them to long for the endless immensity of the sea. We have 613 details. Why doesn't HaKadosh Baruch Hu just say, be a good Jew, connect to me, Avas Hashem, Yiras Hashem, Anokhi Hashem Elokecha? Why so elaborate? It seems like Chazal are even confused about this. Chazal aren't even sure if we'd be better off with just this sort of one mitzvah. The Kodesh Baruch Hu just gave us one vision to run toward. Some of Chazal and Makos are telling us it's better for us, but Chazal and Erevin are telling us it's not better off. And what we're going to try and appreciate is, what role do mitzvahs play in our lives? Why? Why do we have all these mitzvahs? And how can we better appreciate and understand them? We're going to look at three approaches, and I guess we'll map it out. The first approach is an approach in mindset. Second approach, I think, is more of a process-based approach and appreciation. The third one, I can definitely say it's surprising. It might even be shocking. Unfortunately, we don't have enough people in the room for there to be an effective storm out, but I'm hoping that'll take place. Let's jump in. Answer number one, I was exposed to this by Rabbi Chanoch Teller. He made a documentary about Chassidus that I was watching in my shul years ago. And I don't remember most of it. I remember thinking, like, why am I watching a documentary about Hasidim? Like, I like spend time in like Hasidic neighborhoods. Like, I could just like talk to Hasidim. I don't need to like see a documentary about them. But there was a quote from Rabbi Dr. Abraham J. Twersky that I found very powerful.
I grew up with him.
Oh. Well, I didn't realize he was so chashuv. He grew up with you. That's amazing.
Yeah.
But he said... But Rabbi Dr. Abraham J. Twersky basically told us that
The difference between Hasidus and not Hasidus, true or not, is that you could live your life, you have mitzvahs to do, and it's a checkbox. I daven today, great. I put on tefillin today, great. All right, now I'm done. Now I don't need to worry about being Jewish again until lunchtime when I have to wash and I have to make a bracha before I eat. But you're checking the boxes. You're going through the motions, but there's not like a holistic experience. Whereas the idea behind Hasidus, as explained by Rabbi Dr. Abraham J. Twersky, is that your whole life is enveloped in service of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. That everything I'm doing can have some sort of connection to Hashem. That's how he framed and couched what Hasidus is motivated by, what it's all about. And I think that if we look at a medrash at the end of Parsha Shlach that I learned with my dear Harusa, Howard Karish, we sort of see this a little bit. Talking about tzitzis. Medrash is beautiful. We're going to look at it. We're probably not going to read the whole thing. So, Vasulahem tzitzis, Hadahu dechsiv, Orzur letzadik. This whole mitzvah of tzitzis is built on this concept that, you know, tzaddikim have a lot to offer and a lot of opportunity. Hashem chavetz man tzid kov, that a Kodesh Baruch Hu wants his tzaddikim to do well. And notice this line, Hashem chavetz man tzid kov. It's the same pasuk that we saw in Makos about HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanting to increase mitzvos. Zara Kodesh Baruch Hu, Kodesh Baruch Hu planted a Torah v'esa mitzvos l'hanchilom Yisrael l'chayo olam haba. The purpose of the Torah is so the Jewish people can inherit the world to come. There's nothing in this world that doesn't have some capacity for the Jewish people to use to fulfill a mitzvah. You're going to go out and you're going to plow. This is also in our parasha. You can't go out and plow in the field with two similar animals. That would have been a good avera for me to mention. Great. Lizrawa, you're going to go plant. You shouldn't plant kelayim. And so whether I'm going to be plowing or I'm going to be planting, I've got mitzvos to fulfill. Liktzor lo tiktzor tzircha, lash, reshi sari so chemchala, shakat, nasana kon lizor alechaim, and so on and so forth. Kan Sipur, we'll get to that in a moment. Anytime you're going to do a mitzvah, whether you're going to plant, whether you're going to plow, you're going to eat an animal, every time there's some action that could arise in this world, the Kodesh Baruch Hu says, let me give you a mitzvah to do there. Don't just do it stam, do it in a mitzvah fashion. You know, do it a little bit like this. And now it's a mitzvah. You're going to kill the cow anyway so that it could be eaten. You're trying to get the meat nonetheless. Instead of, I don't know, bashing it over the head with a hammer, instead shecht it in this way, and now you've done a mitzvah. And what this medrash is driving at is that the purpose of the mitzvahs and the goal of the mitzvahs are Kodesh Baruch Hu wanted to give us schuyos. We're doing these things anyway. But you can do them with a geshmak. You can do them with a Kodesh Baruch Hu in mind. You can do them in a mitzvah capacity. And what I think is funny is that this sort of approach of Hasidus, I'm far from an expert in the advent and the start of Hasidus, but this approach that is explained by Rabbi Dr. Abraham J. Twersky, I think is pashut. I think that's part of what the Midrash is talking about, that anything and everything you're going to do is going to be within the service of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. That's the purpose, that's the design of mitzvos. That's step one. And that's a good step. And honestly, we could end this year here because that's worth thinking about and knowing that anything I'm doing can have a mitzvah involved in it. Everything I'm doing has a level of kedusha to it. Even when when I'm tying my shoes, there's a system of doing it. I put on the right one, I put on the left one, I tie the left one, I tie the right one. Torah can be infused into every moment of my life. But we're going to look at another approach because this one is interesting, but it doesn't excite me enough. So I want to look at an alternative approach based on an insight I had last year about the Shiluach HaKein. One moment. English translations, as we're all likely aware, are fraught with issue because as soon as you translate something, you sort of lose the essence of the message. And you lose the nuance in the message. What I'm confused about, though, is that in nearly every translation I looked at, I looked at JPS, I looked at Chabad, I looked at Archul, I looked at whatever Safari has, I looked at a lot of options, and everyone translates this pasuk in the same way, and I don't understand why, because they're all wrong. Ki yikare kan sipor, if Yikare, if you see a bird, we'll say, that's not an exact translation. if you see a bird then and you want to take the eggs, shoo away the mother bird and then take the eggs. This is a mitzvah that Rashi describes. It's easy. It's and yet even so, it's equivalent to that of kivud avim, of honoring our parents, which is the hardest and biggest of mitzvos. And that discussion is a discussion we can have another time. But what I don't understand is ki yikare kansipur. What does the word yikare mean? If I have the letters kuf, resh, aleph, and I approached a second grader or a third grader, I said, how do you translate that word? He or she will always tell me 100% of the time, kare, like likro, it means to call out. A kriya is a calling out. Ki yikare kansipur means if a bird should call out to you, then do so and so. But I was going to list a bunch of different translations, but I thought that Kedai for me to just let you know. Every translation assumes that this second word is not yikare with an aleph, but yikare with a hey. If along the road you chance upon a bird's nest, you happen upon a bird's nest, you see a bird's nest unexpectedly, yikare with a hey is this language of it, of a happening. It just occurred unexpectedly. But yikare with an aleph means to call out. And for some reason, all of our English translations assume that Chazal, that the Torah is telling us that if you just so happen to experience this, and not assuming that there's any calling going on, then you should do it. Now, on a halakhic basis, part of the mitzvah of Shiluach HaKain is that you sort of happen to be there. That there's a lot of hefkeris involved in the process. No one's allowed to own the place in which the bird's nest is occupying. Still, I don't understand this translation. And so as I was thinking about it, this is my Bar Mitzvah Parsha, so I'm much more familiar. It's Geshmak. I'm not about Baal Kriya, and I'm like not holding in every pasuk in the Torah. But when you know all of the steps, when you know all the psukim in the Parsha, it's much easier to navigate through the Parsha. It's wonderful. I really feel like I should lay in every single Parsha and know all the psukim very well, because it's such a Geshmak. When like you know exactly what's going on, you know the order, you know how the phrasing is, it's great. You know when the Sefer of interesting origin is misquoting some of the psukim, just basically like they don't have the words right, it's great. And so yikare means to call out, but we think of it as it happened. I wonder if the answer really falls into army training or basketball. I'll give the basketball mashal because it's more familiar. I was never so zocha to be in Sahal or any other army. But in basketball training, you do something funny. You do something called layup lines. And a layup line means that you basically, everyone practices standing right next to the basket, throwing the ball up in the easiest way possible so the ball can go in. And in modern day parlance, we'll call something a layup, meaning this is really easy. You don't have to worry about it. It's going to be fine. And yet, consistently, basketball players will practice layups. Why? Because the goal of practicing a layup is not to be able to master this little shot. Everyone can make a layup. If you can't make a layup, don't play basketball. You should be playing basketball in a serious capacity. Yours truly probably shouldn't have never played basketball, because I don't think that layups are as easy for me as they should be. Why do people practice layups? Why do teams spend hours practicing layups? It's not so that they can get good at making layups. It's so that layups are no longer even like a thought process. Layups become something that just happen naturally. As soon as I have the ball underneath, my body just knows it's going up and shooting. In contrast, this happens in the Israeli army when it comes to certain drills, that they'll practice drills over and over and over and over again so that they don't need to worry about where their mind is at during the drill, that if they need it in some sort of live action situation, they can just do it because their body just knows what needs to happen. You're almost like developing an instinct when you do something over and over and over again. Ramban, and he's by far and wide not the only person who says it, that the mitzvah of Shiluach HaKain is to develop something good inside you, to not become an achzari, to not become insensitive, that you're going to take a mother's children, take her eggs when she's standing right there. And that's all really based upon an idea that the Ramban quotes in this piece like three times, but it's based, but it's from Vicious Rabbit. It's probably in a few places, but in, but on in the middle of page three, we say Rav Amar Lo Nasu Hamitzvos El Letzarifes Abrios BaAdam. Why do we have mitzvos? To make us shine. To mitzvah milashon zikoy, that we should glow. And the idea behind this mitzvah Shiloh HaKan is that we should do something that is going to be wonderful, that's going to be warm, that's going to be thoughtful and caring and considerate. But on a deeper level, it's not just that we should do it, but that we should do it naturally. Maybe the reason why there's such a big reward for doing Shiloh HaKan is because it's ki karei kan sipur, that when you're being called out, that when it's so natural for you, that you would never think to take the eggs from a mother bird unless you sent her away first. You could never be so insensitive, so auxari. And you're being called out, but this mitzvah calls to you because you've developed into the personality that is sensitive. Then that's maybe what mitzvos are trying to accomplish. That I've got all these different mitzvos, lezakos Yisrael, not to give us merit per se, but lezakos Yisrael to make the Jewish people shine, that they should be an emanating light of good, of natural tendency toward the positive. And I think that the fact that we have so many of these mitzvos is actually well explained by Malcolm Gladwell. Now, I assume that everyone here has heard of Outliers. At this point, it's been around for a long time. This is so exciting that I get to expose you to Outliers. Oh, gewaltig. It's not quite the same thing, but when there's like a well-known Dvar Torah, or a Dvar Torah that you feel like is really, that you've known for a long time, and you can expose it to someone else, it's very exciting. So I'm very excited. Malcolm Gladwell, in his book called Outliers, develops a yisod that he's spread all over, but basically, he argued that you are better off, if you want to be a hockey player, although probably not just hockey player, if you want to be a hockey player, you're much better off being born in January, February, March, or April. And he said, why? He says, well, if you look at the roster of the 2007 Canadian Youth Hockey League, the Medicine Hat Tigers on our right side of the page, most of their birthdays are in the beginning half of the year. And a psychologist named Roger Barnsley, I think in the 80s, was sort of tracking this, and he realized that in a lot of hockey games, a lot of the players are born in that first half of the year. And so Malcolm Gladwell, based on this, Barnsley is sort of exploring it and looking at it and saying, well, why is that the case? He says, well, if you think about it, in a youth hockey league, you have to get into the league. You don't just walk on. You got to try out. You have to make the team. And so already, you know, in Canada, hockey is a pretty serious sport. They think it's as fun as football, which is crazy, but if they just don't know any better, they don't have football there. And so at like 8 or 9 years old, these kids are playing hockey. But if a kid is born in December and a kid is born in January, but they're both born in the same year, but two kids are both born in the year 1990 and they're playing hockey, but one of them was born in January 1990 and one of them was born in December of 1990. January 1990 is a much bigger kid. He's basically a 9-year-old when this kid's still an 8-year-old. He's had almost a full year of growth. And so when it comes to hockey, being bigger, you're going to be faster, you're going to be stronger. And that propels itself forward and forward and forward over the course of these very formative years, so that by the time the kid is 16, 17, 18, where maybe the difference in size and age, even though there are 11 months between the January and December kid, maybe it's not as noticeable. For sure, when they get to like, you know, 20s, it's not as noticeable. But at that point, it doesn't matter anymore, because when this kid was 8, 9, 10, he was getting into every league. He was always getting a chance to play on the team because he was bigger, he's faster. And so just by virtue of the fact that he's older, he was better. But now he's not just better. Now he has had so much more time to play than the other kid, than the December kid. The December kid's got no shot. He'll never catch up. Not for lack of physical ability, but because he was born at the wrong time of the year. Does this make sense? All right, I'm getting some nods. This is the vort that Malcolm Gladwell develops. But he says, but we could take this a step further, because the whole idea in his argument is that you'll be better off playing in the NFL, in the NHL, because you've had more chance to practice. He says that in order to develop an expertise, this is like his big Torah, the Outliers Torah, is that it takes 10,000 hours of practice at something to become an expert. And how you practice is okay, but deliberate practice at something or to be involved in your craft 10,000 hours, and then you'll become an expert. Now, just to fact check him for a moment, if you look at the NHL ages, the first quarter of the year, you know, January, February, March, I don't remember if April's involved in there or not, but makes up 29% of the NHL players. Now, that's 4% higher, and so maybe there's some you know, meaning to his research, maybe not, okay. But it's still the point he still makes, that if someone is spending so many hours doing something, it's going to develop that expertise. And if from a young age, these kids are getting more and more opportunities to play, and therefore, because they have so many more opportunities, they're better at playing, and they're just going to be far and wide better and further ahead than anyone else because they're just had more opportunity. Rotzak Kadosh Baruch Hu Zakus Es Yisrael. Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us tons of opportunities to do mitzvos. And because I've done these mitzvos so many times, now, like, I'm an expert in mitzvos. I have inculcated this instinct that from the Ki Ikarei Kan Sipur, the instinct to do good, the instinct to be positive, the instinct to be a Torah personality exists so much clearer in me because I've got so many mitzvos to do. And that's our second approach. Approach number one was, why do we have so many mitzvos? So that every part of my life can be encompassed with an activity of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Answer number two was that we effectively develop 10,000 hours of mitzvos, this constancy of doing mitzvos, of being involved in mitzvos. Number three is a little different. Number three, I think without question, is my favorite approach, the one that got me most excited and motivated us to learn this together. It's also the one that might get me kicked out of the kollel. That's always exciting. Now is when you guys should be like, no, that can't happen. We want you to stay. It's so great to learn together. Okay, all right, fine. Answer number three, very simply, is that we've basically looked at these two Gemaras. We looked at the Gemara in Erevin that said you're better off not having mitzvos. And we looked at the Gemara in Makos saying that you're better off, yes, having mitzvos. And we've effectively been paskining, if you will, according to Makos, that we are better off with mitzvos. What if we paskin like Erevin? What if we say that we are not better off having mitzvos? We do not want to have so many mitzvos. We do not want to have 613 mitzvos. Later on in the Gemara Makos, there's a discussion about a lot of the Nevi'im trying to boil down the mitzvos. David HaMelech said, 613 is a lot. What if we think about 11 mitzvos instead of 613? We're not going to go through all the details. The Gemara is like a whole page. And then Yeshaya came around and said, not 11, 6. Mika comes around and says 3. Yeshaya comes out around and says 2. Amos, 1. Chabkuk, also 1. Ultimately concluding in Tzadok be'Amos Munaso Yichya. And we've got this Shashel, so we've got this continuation of Nevi'im who are trying to say, don't look at all 613 mitzvos. Just look at one mitzvah, two mitzvos, 11 mitzvos. What in the world is going on here? What is this? What are these Nevi'im trying to do? Was this like a party trick? They're all like standing around, and David HaMelech is like, guys, I got this. Not 613, just 11. And Yeshaya is like, 11, I can do 6. And they're like one-upping each other. And Chabkuk, just by virtue of the fact that he came later on, he's able to chop one. What is going on here? What are we trying to accomplish? I think it's very simple. We don't want 613 mitzvos. Taryag mitzvos is not good for us. But we need them. We don't have an option not to have them. Originally, the goal, without question, was not to have 613 mitzvos. What was the original goal? How many mitzvos were we supposed to have? One! Kadosh Baruch Hu created the world. Everything was Tov Ma'od. And there was one mitzvah for the Jewish people, for mankind, for Kadosh Baruch Hu's people to accomplish. Don't eat the tree. Zehu. Do everything else you want. He says, you can eat from Kol Eitz HaSada. Maybe that's an allusion to, you can do whatever you want. I have no guidelines for you. Just don't do this one thing. But what happened? We messed up. Adam and Chava eat from the Eitz Hadas. So that one thing we were supposed to do. You had one job. And we messed it up. And so what does the Kodesh Baruch Hu say? Okay. That one job, maybe that wasn't enough context. That wasn't enough structure. You need a little bit more. Let's try seven instead. The Maharal says in Tiferes Yisrael, we don't have it here, that the increase from one mitzvah to seven mitzvahs, interestingly, he says that they're all low sases. I didn't think about them like that. I thought that, you know, having a government was an assay, was an active, but it sounds like the Maharal thinks that you shouldn't live in a society that doesn't have a government. That's just an interesting point that I noticed. But we're going to try seven instead. Maybe you can function. Maybe you can live with very little restrictions. Sheva mitzvot b'nei noach is not that much. Just seven. Didn't work, though. And so he tries again with the Jewish people. And he gives them 10 mitzvos. Aseres Adibros. Matan Torah. And now this is the plan. We are only going to have 10 mitzvos. You don't have to worry about anything else. But 40 days later, Chetah Ego. And so now Kodesh Baruch Hu says, okay, maybe this general framework, this idea, these guidelines are not sufficient. So I'm going to make it very clear. Do this, do that. How are you supposed to eat? Eat in this capacity, in this manner. When you're going to daven, you should put on these parshiot into a box and put them on your arm. Kodesh Baruch Hu gets very specific. Because the further away we went from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the harder it was for us to fulfill, the more and more structure we got. The further away, the less innate it is for us as a Jewish people to do mitzvos and to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the more and more mitzvos we get. Let me ask you a question. How many mitzvos are there? 613. There's a gazillion derabbanans. There's like 10,000 mitzvos. What's the very first halakha in Shulchan Aruch? It's not Anokhi Hashem Elokecha. It's not any of the 613. Yisgaber ke'ari la moda avodas boro. Get up in the morning like a lion. Get up well. Get up in gishmak. You can't roll out of bed. Nope, that's not 613. That's another halakha that I have to worry about. So now I've got 614. And as I go through Shulchan Aruch, it just piles on and on and on. And the later and later we get, the more and more and more mitzvos we have. 500 years ago, 1,000 years ago, without question, there were way fewer mitzvos. But the more that seemingly we're not able to fulfill the mitzvos to their fullest extent, we need more mitzvos. We need more and more and more. Halakha gets more... Right. Halakha gets more restrictive as time goes on. And plenty of people complain about that. Oh, back in the day. You know, Tosfos says that you actually don't need to wait between meat and milk. Just wash your mouth out. And people are like, oh, we should ask our Tosfos and not wait between meat and milk. Maybe in the days of Tosfos, that was an option. That's not an option anymore. There's something not happening here. Baruch Hashem, I thought of a mashal. I don't know if you ever did this in your writing class, but there's a writing exercise that also happens in occupational therapy with my wife, who was sort of my inspiration for this, of task-based task analysis or task-based writing, where if you want to explain to someone all the nuanced details involved in something, where you want to get people to appreciate the steps involved in just writing in general, ask them, what does it take to make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich? They'll tell you, you take peanut butter, you take jelly, put it on bread, and you eat. So if I was really into it, I would have brought in 2 jars of peanut butter. A friend of mine did this on NCSY. Take a jar of peanut butter, take a jar of jelly, and just kind of like throw them both on a piece of bread and then start eating, because that's the only instruction I got. And there's this exercise where you have people outline each and every detail. Open the cap. Really, it starts out, go over to the cabinet. Open the door to the cabinet. Look at the second shelf and find the right thing. And we can go through each and every step. Now, if I'm looking at it zeroed in, narrow, what purpose is knowing how to turn my hand in a counterclockwise motion to me eating a sandwich? There's no connection between these two things. This is a motion, and eating a sandwich is consumption. But if you understand a bigger picture, then opening the jar is a necessity of getting the stuff out so that I can eat my sandwich. And so maybe, Kodesh Baruch Hu said, I want you guys to eat a sandwich. The goal is just for us to have sandwiches together. Isn't that really the goal all the time? Just so people to have sandwiches? The goal is for us to eat some sandwiches. But you don't know how to make sandwiches. And that's fine. So I'm gonna detail it for you. And at first, Kodesh Baruch Hu just basically told us, you want to take peanut butter and jelly, and this is obviously the most important Yesod, put the peanut butter on one side and the jelly on the other side, and then put them together. Otherwise, you'll have knife contamination, and you get one into the other, and Baruch Hashem. And even putting aside any sort of allergies, it's still very dangerous. That's like basic. You know, Kodesh Baruch is like, all right, I'm going to outline it. Sheva mitzvos, maybe a seres adibros. But eventually, Kodesh Baruch is like, okay, we're going to go step by step here. And that's fine with me, because we're going to eat a sandwich. But now we're going to give you every detail. You're going to shake a lulav in a few weeks. And if maybe you'll feel a little silly. What in the world does me shaking this branch have to do with connection to Kodesh Baruch Hu? And the answer is that if I understood every detail of the opening of the of making a sandwich, I would appreciate how opening a jar might help. The way Einstein put it is that things should be made as simple as possible, but no simpler. Our Torah mitzvos, our 10,000 halakos, are as simple as possible and not simpler, but sometimes it needs to be as simple as possible. And I had this idea. I felt confident about it. It feels like MS. I'm getting a few nods, and no one's stormed out yet, which is a little unfortunate, but we'll have to take it. But I looked around, I asked a bunch of people, and no one told me it's pure kvira. And so Rav Tzedek HaKohen Lublin suggests something similar. Rav Tzedek HaKohen, the top of page 5, which, based on the pre-tzadik and the Eskanon, says, "B'emes, luli hayitzer hara, hayadai b'maymar anochi, shenitaka tamator b'libam." Now, he's saying it a little bit differently. He's using a few different words and concepts, but basically what he's communicating is that there's only really one mitzvah we need to worry about. Just anochi Hashem Elokecha, just connecting to Kodesh Baruch Hu. But we've got a yetzer hara, because we make mistakes, because we're not doing so well, and so we need a little bit more. He says, continues, "Shetzarech al zeh taryag mitzvos, shehem taryag zine itin." There's a language of the Zohar that there's 613 suggestions, which if we were reform would be very convenient, but suggestions meaning their weight, itin, not itin in a suggestion, but etzot, advice, guidance. Eich lahasig hayira mitam sheyesh hayitzer hara shiyuchal lekalka. How am I supposed to get to this connection to Kodesh Baruch Hu? Whether we call it Yira, we call it Ava, we call it Anochi Hashem Elokecha, push comes to shove, it's a recognition and appreciation of our Kodesh Baruch Hu. It is basically having a sandwich with God. That is our goal. We want to have a sandwich with God. And Rav Tzedek is telling us that the 613 mitzvot are really just a way of getting there. But the Maharsha, back in Makos, actually says it even better. He says, what's this machlokas in the first place between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai? What are they arguing about? Noach shenivra, Noach shelo nivra. He says, in the middle of the line, he says, oh, Kasha, I don't know what's going on. Kaven shebara kodesh baruch hu adam, al korkakak, Noach lo shenivra. If God did it, it must be good. Everything that kol man da'avad rachmano l'tava of it, everything kodesh baruch hu does is good. It must be a good thing. Why are they arguing? And furthermore, it says, v'ne'emar bo ki tov. At the end of creating Adam, Kodesh Baruch Hu said Ki Tov. Now I looked around the Mefarshim, and most people don't assume that Ki Tov, that Tov Ma'od is talking about Adam. That Tov Ma'od is collective, but that Adam actually was sort of the one flaw in creation. But that's for another time. But when we say Yifashvish B'Masav Shezuhi Mitzvah Hamakom Aleinu, that's the mitzvah that Kodesh Baruch Hu gives to us. Aval Ha'inyan Kamo Shenemar Shenasan Lano Hakodesh Baruch Hu Toyag Mitzvos. Kodesh Baruch Hu gave us 613 mitzvos, Shas Alavin, Ramach Asin, 365 no's, 248 yeses, Ubaha Riboy Mitzad HaMekabel. Where did the Riboy, where did this increase of mitzvos come from? The Mekabel, the receiver, from us. Ki Mitzad HaNosein, from Kodesh Baruch Hu's perspective, Baruch Hu, Kulam Heim Kimitzvah Achad. We're all leading to the same place. It's all one goal. It's all really one mitzvah. And I think that's actually what's happening, what's going to happen in a few weeks from now. In 3 weeks, we're going to have Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah is the big day. Rosh Hashanah is the biggest day of the year, the Yom HaDin. How many mitzvos are associated with Rosh Hashanah?
Pretty much one.
One mitzvah.
Listen to the shofar. I hear this.
Now, what is the mitzvah of shofar? What's the bracha that we say? Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech HaOlam, Asher Kidshanu Mitzvah Tzivanu, Kodesh Baruch Hu, you commanded us to do this one mitzvah, not Litzkoa B'Shofar, but Lishmoa Kol Shofar, to listen, to hear this mitzvah, And the Taz pointed out, quoting from the tour, that the mitzvah is not to blow the shofar, but to hear the shofar, which it gets complicated if someone has difficulty hearing. The mitzvah is to blow it. Now, this is, I guess, this will give us a little bit of a Rosh Hashanah Dvar Torah. And we had the very specific Shiloh HaKein Dvar Torah. We'll have the Rosh Hashanah Dvar Torah. Adam Chava had this one mitzvah they had to do, and they messed it up. So, what's the tikkun? What's the makeup? What are we doing on Rosh Hashanah, the anniversary of their chait? We have one mitzvah. And that one mitzvah, the only mitzvah, is just listen. Kodesh Baruch Hu said, don't eat from the tree. They didn't listen. Our mitzvah on Rosh Hashanah, just listen. Don't do anything else. All you have to do is shave your time. All you have to do is not do anything. Blowing shofar, just sit there. Do nothing else. It's like awkward for people in shul to like just listen to tzkios. Like I'm not allowed to talk. Like I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing. A lot of people who like get antsy, like they're like they feel like they need to be like reading like a L'shem Yichud or something. Just like what am I doing now? I'm just listening. Kodesh Baruch Hu says don't do anything. Just listen. We can take that idea a little further, but we're not going to. We're going to skip this Refersh, but Refersh basically says that the more connected you are to a Kodesh Baruch Hu, the less mitzvot you have. That's why women have less mitzvot than men. It's a great marmakum, but we don't need to look at it at the moment. But we'll look at this last piece at the very bottom. Rav Kook says in Orsa Tshuva, and Rav Kook, Kayadua, would not be happy that we talk about learning Orsa Tshuva during Elul. He thinks Orsa Tshuva is something that happens all the time, not just during Elul. But at the bottom of page 6, at the end of our packet, Rav Kook basically tells us, I would read the language, but it's just hard to understand Rav Kook's language. Rabbi Mordechai Becher says the goal of Rav Kook, learning Rav Kook, is not the words. He's not a Rishon where every word is medayik. He had beautiful, flowery Hebrew. And so if you can appreciate the concept, that's good enough. So the concept, you have the text, but I'll just tell you. He says everyone has an innate connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We all have, we could call it a Pintel Yid, we all have that connection to Hashem. But we got a little messed up. It didn't work so well. Adam Chava had that natural connection. It was very obvious, and it didn't click, and they messed it up. And over the course of time, tainted our neshama. We've covered it up. We've blocked it. It's harder for us to see a Kodesh Baruch Hu. It's harder for us to connect to a Kodesh Baruch Hu than it was for Adam Chava. And so we need more mitzvos. 500 years ago, there was less halacha, less restrictions and guidelines, because it was more natural, more easy for them to connect. But today, it's harder for us to connect. And so we have more mitzvos. But it's not that having more mitzvos is good. It's not that having more mitzvos is bad. It's a function. There's really only one mitzvah. The goal is just one mitzvah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu increased them because he wants us to be able to jump in. He wants us to be able to connect. He wants us to be able to really fulfill that ultimate one mitzvah of Anochi. And we'll end with a story. I'm happy to do the long, more elaborate one, but I think also we're supposed to avoid yelling excessively and in the interest of time. Rabbi Leibel Eger, the grandson of Rabbi Akiva Eger, that wants to explore Hasidus. He spends some time in Kutsk, in the intense Kutsk Hasidus. And on Yom Kippur afternoon, someone the Kutsk Hasidim, this is like Litvak kid. And he was a genius, he was very impressive. But like Litvaks, particularly then with Hasidim, like it didn't mesh well. He was like he crossed over, and I guess they were trying to explain and teach them what Hasidus is all about. And so they walk up to him and they say, "Lego, how's davening?" He goes, "It's nice. I didn't know people sing on Yom Kippur. That might have been my own." And they're like, "All right, Kavada, we're gonna have a l'chaim." And he goes, "A l'chaim? Mike knows the story." And like, yeah, l'chaim. And he's like, wasn't Shacharis Geshmak? Shacharis were great. Wasn't Musaf Gevaldik and Leibedik? Yeah. So imagine how good Mincha and Ne'ilah are going to be if we've got a little bit of Mashke inside us. It'd be Gevaldik. And Rabbi Leibel Eger is like, what? And so they go over, they sit him down, then they take out a bottle, and they're opening the bottle, and he's like, guys, you know the Shulchan Aruch is very, very clear that even to help davening, you're not allowed to drink anything on Yom Kippur. We don't eat on Yom Kippur. And they're like, don't worry about it. This is going to make it kishmak. It's going to be worthwhile. I know the Rambam says that you're going to get kareis if you eat on Yom Kippur. I'm not so sure it's a good idea. They're like, Reb Leibel, trust us. This is going to make your davening incredible. he's like getting nervous, and he's like, guys, you can't eat on Yom Kippur. Torah says very clearly, don't eat on Yom Kippur. It's one of the Chamishi Inuyim. And don't be so worried. Now there's a shot in front of him, and one of the Hasidim is picking up his shot, and he's starting to say the bracha. He says, Baruch! And Rabbi Leibel was like, doesn't know what to do. And he's like, tried everything. And he said this, he said that, and it's not working. And the guy says, Ata! And Rabbi Leibel slams on the table and says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said you can't eat on Yom Kippur. What are you doing? You cannot eat on Yom Kippur. Stop! And the Hasidim start laughing. They put the drinks down. They weren't planning on drinking in the first place. And they told him, the reason we don't eat on Yom Kippur is not because the Shulchan Aruch said it. It's not because the Rambam. It's not because the Torah said it. We don't eat on Yom Kippur because of Kadosh Baruch Hu said so. Ultimately, all of these mitzvos are about connecting to Ribbono Shel Olam, to Anochi. And Parshat Kisei just happens to be the one that gives us the most opportunities to connect. Yishkoach, it's been a pleasure learning together.
Thank you. Nice start.